Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And on this holiday weekend, time once again to talk about cars or trucks or vans or the problems you may be having with yours. Just because it's a holiday doesn't mean these troubles don't happen. Denny Long back once again with ASC certified technician Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful but damp Grand Avenue in St. Paul. I know, Nick, you don't happen to be on Grand right now, but thanks for joining us and happy Easter to you.
You too, Denny. You know, as you know, kids are on spring break, so we're actually in Palm Springs, headed back to Minnesota this afternoon.
Oh, you're coming back this afternoon. What kind of weather have you experienced? Do I want to know?
You don't. Okay. The kids are sunburnt. We'll just say that.
Oh, all right. Well, have a safe trip back, and I know we'll be joining forces again next week. But in the meantime, if you're new to the show, thanks for checking us out. If you've are experiencing a problem with your car, as I said, your truck, your van, and you need to bring it in for service with for your to your favorite shop or your favorite dealer, but you want to know what could be ailing. That's what Nick does here. He gives you a little analysis over the radio. Or maybe you just want to ask a mechanic a question, whatever the case may be. You don't have to be a do-it-yourselfer, though, as Nick will tell you, we have quite a few folks who do call in and try their hands at fixing their own vehicles. But you don't have to. Give us a call. Send a text. Just one number for either, 651-461-9226. Again, either a phone call or a text. If you want to call and chat, great. If you want to just send a text, either way, 651-461-9226. Text came in earlier this morning. I'll just kind of simplify it here. It doesn't say what kind of a vehicle it was, but the point is he or she got new brakes installed. And like a week or two later, they're starting to squeak. And their question is, what can cause new brakes to squeak? You've seen that. You've heard that.
We have. You know, it could be something. It's the parts themselves, maybe it's a defect in the making of the part. Maybe something needs a little lubricating. I think in this situation, it's been a couple of weeks. If it's constantly making this noise, I take it back, you know, and hopefully they can experience, figure out which wheel, which brake pad or which slide or whatever's going on there. But I would say, if it continues to happen for the next several days, it's not going away, take it back, have them take another look. It could just be a defective part or maybe something needs a little more lubrication.
Here's something that I wondered about over the years. I mean, parts have changed. Quality has changed. What about brake parts? In your career, you've been around for a few years in the business. What have brake parts, specifically, I guess, disc brakes these days? I don't know how many drum brakes are around, but have disc brakes evolved into some pretty good quality stuff?
Absolutely. You know, it's as they've changed. You know, and if you're old enough to remember, they were more of an organic pad. You'd get 20, 30,000 miles out of them. You'd resurface the brake rotors for one or two brake jobs. Well, now with the ceramics and the other components in those pads, we'll see brakes go 70, 80,000 miles, depending on driving style and type of vehicle, obviously. But with that kind of mileage, you'll see that the rotors are replaced now also with the fuel economy requirements and all the emission standards. They try to keep that rotating weight down so those brake rotors are much thinner and lighter than they used to be. But if you're getting 60, 70, even 80,000 miles out of a set of brakes, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I should say. Nick, let's grab a phone call. Ralph checking in from Buffalo, I believe, this morning. Thank you, Ralph. What is your question for Nick?
So I just purchased a brand new SUV, and I'm wondering when I should have my first oil change.
Brand new vehicle. I was checked the owner's manual. Depending on the make and model, it might vary, but I still firmly believe, as we often say, is that 5,000-mile interval. Keeps it on a nice regular schedule. It keeps the oil clean, keeps the filter new. So my recommendation would be I'd go 5,000 miles going forward.
I was thinking of Steve Cannon's comment of when I was being long in tooth, I remember many years ago about people saying, well, if you get a brand new vehicle, don't drive it over, what, 50 miles an hour or 60 or something. Take it easy. And then with all those metal shavings, change the oil right away. Do you remember? You wouldn't, but I do. Remember people telling you about that.
The break-in period or, we'd do certain repairs. We'd have to let it run for a certain period of time to break everything and set, get everything seated and set. And I think there might have been some truths at that, in that time and era with the quality of the parts and the manufacturing. But I think today's day, they've got most of that figured out where you go buy a new vehicle, you just go drive it like you would any other.
Yeah. No real break-in period, I don't think. But as far as the oil changes, though, I mean, is it if the manufacturer says, oh, you don't have to worry about it for 10,000 miles. We on this show, as our listeners, regular listeners know, with the great oil that's available now, synthetic, 5,000 is a good kind of target, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, to that caller's question, if they're of the mindset, it's a brand new vehicle, I'd like to change oil after a couple thousand miles, there's nothing saying you can't do it. It's just not necessary. It's peace of mind. It's your vehicle. You buy a vehicle brand new today, odds are you're going to keep it for 15 years, 200,000-300,000 miles. So the little maintenance you do in the beginning goes a long way at the end. So like you said, that 5,000-mile interval. And sometimes we'll say people will call in or text and say, I don't drive that much. Well, in those situations, I still think the vehicle should get looked at twice a year. So maybe the spring, the fall, winter, summer, however you decide to do it, split that interval into 6 months. Whether or not the oil needs to be changed, the car should still get a good look at.
No, I think that's really smart. If a lot of folks, many folks don't drive, or maybe they've got an extra vehicle or two, and they just use it for certain reasons. And yeah, that's a couple of times a year is good, because other things may be going wrong and you don't know about it. Texter says this, Nick, is there another reason the battery light came on if the battery is good in a 2012 Town and Country?
Typically, if the battery light is coming on, it's seeing the voltage dropping lower than it should be set at. The alternator is the component, once the vehicle is running, that creates that power. The battery completes the circuit and gives the reserve to start the vehicle. But once your vehicle is running, you need that alternator to keep the vehicle operating and keep the battery charged. Now, if that light is on, that's telling us that likely the alternator is not charging enough to keep everything going. So now you're using the reserve of the battery. At some point, you'll run out of reserve, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, depending on the age of the battery. At that point, the vehicle is likely to stall and you'd be stranded. So if you ever see your battery light on, that's your heads up. Get somewhere quickly, very quickly, to have that looked at.
All right, very good. Well, very quickly, we're going to take a quick break and be right back on the other side. If you have any kind of a car question, and again, maybe you want to always ask a mechanic a question, this is your chance. Nick will be with us till just about 7:45. Our time goes by so quickly. So if you can think of anything you would like to ask Nick, call us, text us sooner rather than later at 651-461-9226. It looks like a pretty wet weekend, maybe even a chance on Easter Sunday tomorrow with about a 30% chance of showers. It's going to be warmer, though. We're going to get up to near 49 tomorrow. If we do get a chance of showers, it's probably going to be after lunch or so tomorrow, at least here in the Twin Cities. Light drizzle falling right now, CCO temp 34 degrees. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. It's a holiday weekend. Hope yours is going well. Denny Wong back with Nick Stoffel, ASE Certified Tech at Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, answering any kind of a car care question you may have this morning till just about 7:45. Looking at another text, let's see if I can piece this together, Nick. 280,000 miles. Help me break this down this morning. Texter says, I've got a 2019 Nissan Altima. Things have gone well. Paid the car off in December. Normal brakes, rotors, light bulbs, one alternator, two batteries later. I'm enjoying this car. I've got a lot of lights on, and the car operates and drives smoothly. I'm afraid if I take the warning light and have them checked out, it'll cost me over what the car's worth to have it fixed. Do I drive it and or trade it in? I guess that's what the texter wants to know. But there again, we talk about not giving all the information. You never know what's behind there, right? Get it checked out, right?
Absolutely true. And, people come in, maybe not daily, but weekly for sure, and say, oh, this car is not worth it until you realize what it's worth. Cars are worth more than we realize. Replacement cost is much more significant. So You have to start with, let's figure out what's wrong with the vehicle. Once we, you know, do the diagnosis, spend the few dollars to have that figured out. Once you know that, you can prioritize. Maybe there's things that you don't need today. Maybe you can put those off for 6 months or 9 months or a year, what have you, or maintain or monitor. Maybe there's things you have to do today. But when you offset the cost of repair versus replacement, think about, you know, your insurance cost changes, registration tabs change. There's a lot more things that we don't think about always. And if you can get another 2 or 3 years out of this vehicle, you're likely money ahead. Obviously, it's a pretty big investment at one point to keep the car going. But if you maintain that vehicle for a long period of time, which it sounds like this texter has, I think it's worth having checked out, assessed, and likely to repair it and keep it going.
Yeah, and I guess the question was, the final question, do I drive it until it just dies or do I trade it in? But at least if you've got more information, you can make a better decision. Like you said, maybe it's you do a couple of things here and there, you know, just to keep it going. At least you're going to be more well-informed with that. What's the best way, Texter wants to know, to clean the igniters? What is that listener talking about?
I'm thinking they're meaning injectors, fuel injectors. So a lot of times the fuels we have detergents and additives in that should keep them running clean. Obviously, there's aftermarket products, and as we talked about from time to time, if you're looking for some maintenance, obviously you can use one of those products to kind of help clean out the fuel system, fuel injectors. I think it does a fine job maintaining. But if you have just got a diagnosis that you have a faulty injector, you're not going to be able to repair a vehicle out of a can. Short of replacement of the part or doing some sort of aggressive cleaning procedure, you're not likely going to happen with, like I said, something you can buy off the shelf and dump into the tank. So a little more information needed there. But I do think that those products are fine products. Follow the instructions how they're recommended. And then weigh the cost. You know, depending on what that product costs, what's the return on your investment?
You know, once in a while, Nick, we talk about or we get questions about spark plugs. Again, depending on the vehicle. Can people ever change their own spark plugs? Depending on the vehicle. I know there's a lot of variables. And you and I have talked that in some cases it's kind of difficult.
It can be, you know, the way they design vehicles and they kind of shoehorn everything under the hood there, and with all the aesthetics and all the noise dampening pieces and plastic pieces on there, sometimes it's hard to even find them, even for the guys that do it every day. We end up having to get into our manuals and figure out the right procedure. Now, if you are comfortable, you have the tools, which is very important, you have the know-how, you have the time, the space, by all means, I think if you're willing to attempt that, I think it's a fine thing to do. Just make sure you follow procedure. You know, there's things that can happen, things that can get broken. There's torque sequences and specifications that need to be followed. So just make sure you have everything you need before you attempt it. And the other thing I would tell you is when you get those spark plugs out, you'll see what brand, replace them with the exact same spark plug. I know a lot of times you go to a parts store and there can be a whole variety and they got a special on this or that, or this is just as good as or better than. I would really stick with whatever came out of the vehicle. So whatever manufacturer, whatever part number, try to buy the same exact spark plug so when you replace them, you're having the same result.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. If you have any kind of a car care question, let's hear from you. Nick will be with us till about 7:45 this morning. 651-461-9226. This listener via text is wondering, how often should tires be balanced? That's besides when being replaced or any suspension-related work. I think that's a good question. How often should tires be balanced?
You know, I guess it kind of depends on if there was a situation, you caught a bad pothole, or if you're feeling something that seems different on how it's riding. Obviously, we rotate the tires probably more often. But if you're seeing something or noticing something different, I think it's a fair time to say, hey, I want to get my tires rotated. While we're rotating them, let's put a fresh balance on them, make sure that they're wearing and riding properly. But it's, you know, it's one of those things that we just don't do as often as maybe we should. So I would say, you know, maybe it's halfway through the tire life or a third, you know, you do it twice during the tire life before replacement, probably not the worst idea.
Yeah, okay. Couple of questions about check engine lights. This one in general wants to know, what are some common reasons a check engine light will be turned on?
Well, there can be hundreds of different fault codes that can store. Unfortunately, there's one light that does a lot of stuff, and we call it the check engine light. It's really the emissions light. So an emissions, for example, can be your gas cap being left off, which is probably the most common. You don't properly seat the gas cap. The vehicle does an emissions test, a purge test. It's looking for any evaporative emissions leak. If the cap is not tight, it's going to allow for that leak to happen. The car is going to identify that and turn the light on. Part of the problem is everybody says, oh, it's just the gas cap, and they ignore it. Well, it can also be something related to a spark plug that we're talking about, like a misfire, something with a transmission that's slipping, or some other things that can be very expensive and also preventable if we see why it is on initially. So if you have a check engine light on, as we've been saying and we talk about, it doesn't mean you have to do it all right today, but at least if you know why the light is on, you can make a better informed decision on your investment and your time and your budget.
Here's something, as you know, Nick, we get from time to time, the mechanic in a can, their question, he or she, is via text. Do oil additives ever work? And what do some of them claim? I've never used an oil additive. What's your feeling about that? I think I know.
Well, you know, once again, I'm not a chemist. I'm not a scientist. Do some of these products do what they say in the can? To some extent, I'm sure they do. Now, is it going to make the car like new, renew? I think that was one of those products years ago. I doubt it. Or some of those other products where they put the product in, they drain all the oil out of the car and run the engine. Don't do that. That maybe it works for a minute, but it doesn't work for the long haul. You know, those products don't necessarily hurt, but they'd be quite expensive. So, you know, if it's something you believe in and you have a track history of it working for you, keep doing what you've been doing. But if you're in a situation where something's not right, which is the reason why people ask these questions, like, oh, I have this leak, or I have this fuel system issue, or I have this oil sludge problem, can I use this product to make that go away? And the answer is going to be no. You're not going to be able to fix a car out of a can. As maintenance, as always, yes, I don't see a problem with it. But definitely talk with your dealership, your mechanic, get their advice, their recommendation. So before you go forward with something, you have a little more information on your side.
Texter wants to know, I think we had this a couple of months ago or so. Texter says, see cars overheating anymore. Do you, as a mechanic, ever see cars that are overheating, and for what reason?
We really don't. You know, the cooling systems have gotten so much better. Part of that is the way the engines are designed. There's a lot less byproduct, meaning there's a lot less exhaust and other contaminants get into the coolant, so the hoses don't fail like they used to. I would say the most common thing we will see is something related to like a thermostat or a water pump failure. But we just don't see the hoses blow off like we did years ago. And part of that's the way the cars are designed, much better and more reliable.
I was thinking, what do they use? Maybe they're still out there. There used to be a product, I think it was called Stop Leak.
Yeah, don't use that.
Don't use that.
That's what I'm going to tell you.
What was that? Was that something you put in the radiator, right?
Yeah, you put in the cooling system to fix the leak, but then those small passages in the radiator or the heater core, which is the bigger issue, get restricted or plugged. So now you don't have that hot coolant making its way through the heater core. So you stop the leak, but now you don't have any heat. So don't use any Stop Leak product. I'm going to go on an edge there and say that's one product don't use.
Don't do it. Okay. Nick, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. Have a look at that holiday forecast and making way for more questions from you. If you have any kind of a car care question, we still have time for yours. As I said, Nick will be taking his leave about another 12 minutes or so. Call us, text us, 651-461-9226 from News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And welcome back to our weekly car care on CCO Radio. Denny Wong here with Nick Stoffel, ASC Certified Technician at Lloyd's. Now, I wanted to ask you, for those that would like to maybe get some help from Lloyd's, how do we find you?
Yes, sir. So as you know, if you ever have a question, need some advice, we will always answer that and help you out. You can call us at 651-228-1316. If you're in St. Paul, you can find us on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth, which is 982 Grand Avenue. If you need more information, check our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
We'll do that very thing, and I know when Nick takes his leave, we'll get you that same information. You're going to have to help me with this one. Texter says, what's your opinion on using DFM module or disabler to shut down cylinder deactivation on a 5.3-liter GM engine? What is that?
Well, that's a touchy subject because there is some known issues with the they're talking about the displacement where they shut cylinders off under certain driving conditions. And there's a known issue with some of those Beltrain parts that will fail could ultimately damage a camshaft, can be a very expensive repair. There are products and ways of deactivating or eliminating that system. Do your research, talk to your shop, your mechanic, your dealership. There's some of those products out there, and I think they work just fine. There's other shortcuts that probably don't. So if it's something you're looking at doing, talk to the pros, get their sound advice. Make sure whoever's doing the work has done it before. But, you know, we tend not to get into that realm, to be honest with you. We kind of put things back the way they were designed. But I do know it's a trouble point. I do know that there's ways of deactivating or disabling that system, which can work.
All right. Interesting. Well, thanks to the texter for that. Here's a 2017 Ram 1500 that has no heat, at least had no heat. The radiator and heater core were flushed, and now it has heat at times. However, texter says when I select a direction for the, you know, on the dash, it might blow only in the feet or on the window or nowhere. Also, all the blend doors have been replaced and still have the same issue. Wow. What's going on there, you think? I knew you were going to say something about the blend doors, but they said they've been replaced.
Well, I think we need to determine whether, you know, they talked about flushing the radiator and the heater core. So we need to determine if it's a matter of heat not being generated, or is it the fact that the heat can't be displaced, meaning that if there's something within the heater box where the way the blend doors are operating, the recirc, the temp doors, you know, something's not operating properly, or is the heat core not getting hot enough to give you heat? So that's the first thing we need to determine. It's like if the car's bypassing the thermostat's not working properly, or there's some sort of restriction somewhere where the hot water's not making its way to the heater core, or if it's not hot enough, that's not going to give you heat no matter what. But if we have a good temperature in and out of the heater core, well, now we have to figure out why is the blower not getting that hot, that air through the heater core to make heat to blow it onto us. So there's two different paths there. That's the first step. We need to figure out which way we're headed. Once we know that, then hopefully we can make it better informed. I know they said the blend door. Well, there's temp doors, there's actuators, a lot of recirc doors. There's a lot of different pieces within that heater box that can control that heat, temperature, and where it's going. So I think we need to kind of pause here, take a step back, and figure out where we're starting at and go from there.
And, of course, wherever they have the work done, bring it back, right?
Absolutely. And if you're not making any headway there, get a second opinion. You know, you're not, you need to have heat. You need to have defrost. It's not worth just dealing with or putting up with it. But, you know, ask for help, call around, you know, make that extra one extra effort.
Yeah, it's worth it. Yeah, absolutely. Looking at a text, it's a rather long text, but it basically they're asking, well, we haven't talked about this. You know, when your steering wheel, you're looking at it, maybe you're at a stoplight and you're looking at it and you're going straight and the wheel is kind of crooked. You know what I mean? It's not even with your steering column. I guess that's the best way I could put it. What's going on there? And is that correctable?
Yes. So if your steering wheel is cantered, it's not, you know, red at noon, we'll call it. Like if it seems like the top of it's off a little bit, like at 1 o'clock or 11 o'clock, likely there's something wrong with the alignment. As the car is going, it's going to correct itself in the manner where the car is going to go straight to the best of its ability. But in doing that, it's going to shift or change the steering a little bit, which is going to make your steering wheel be off. So if your toe adjustment is either way out or way in, the car is going to go straight, but it's going to scrub those tires as it goes down the road, which can cause premature or poor wear pattern. So if you have a steering wheel that is not perfectly level as you're going down the road, take that in, tell them, let them take it for a test drive, see it for themselves. They'll put it on the alignment rack, take some measurements. I think you're going to find that the alignment needs to be adjusted.
All right. The texter says, my brother-in-law who knows cars says battery, low voltage battery can cause many issues. Like what?
Correct. The car cannot start. You know, a lot of the systems in the vehicle need to have the 12-volt stop rate properly, including the starter, right? You know, so you need to get the engine cranking. The engine needs to be cranking at a certain speed for the vehicle to take over and manage itself to get it fired up and running. So if you have a low battery, it just might not start altogether. You might have issues with the power locks to even get into the vehicle. So if your battery is at the end of life or it's near end of life, have it tested. If it's not getting the results you want, you need to get it replaced before you end up stranded or stuck somewhere.
Here's a question that just came in. We were talking about the mechanic, in a can. Is there a good product for oil leaks? Now, if you got a real old car, Texter wants to know, is there a good product for oil leaks on older cars? Is there anything that kind of stuffs
it up? Not that I know of. If it's a rubber sealer gasket that's become brittle, you can't do anything to undo that. They haven't used cork gaskets in decades, so not likely that's the situation. So the truth is, if you have a leak, it's because something has failed. Now, is it possible something can be re-torqued or adjusted? Sure. Likely, I doubt it, to be honest, but it is possible. But the silicone that they use, the rubber seals that they use, they have a lifespan also. Once they've heated and cooled and they've maybe dried out or they started to crack, causing a leak, the only way to repair that is to replace that gasket, unfortunately.
Okay. I think, Nick, we have time for maybe one more text. My dealer wants me to do a brake fluid exchange. Do you think this is necessary? Doesn't say what type of car, what year it is.
Yes, I would say brake fluid is like with every fluid in the vehicle, should be maintained and serviced. We often do it when we do a brake job. Depending on the age and the mileage and the drive cycle of the vehicle will vary. But that fluid is hydroscopic, meaning it'll collect moisture and it'll collect dirt. You get that working its way through this brake system, it can cause premature wear in the calipers and seals. So maintaining your brake system, not just pads and rotors, but also the brake fluid.
So that can that can become contaminated or just oxidized or whatever, right? Not just change it when you get new brakes or brake lines or something, but it should be done occasionally. I guess would your owner's manual tell you that?
It might have an interval. They can test it for moisture. They can look at it. You can see if the fluid's getting very dark. It's starting to collect a lot of the debris and moisture. It's something, like I said, it's one of those neglected or forgotten type of services, but it will affect the caliper seals. It will affect the brake hoses. So it is one of those items. It's not done often, but every couple of years, every so many thousands of miles, it should be serviced.
Now, if somebody, we talk about bringing your car in at least twice a year. When somebody says, I need, it's time for, 6 months, check an oil change. Should the technician be looking at things like that, like a brake fluid?
Absolutely. We try to have a process and procedure. So every time a vehicle comes in, we're looking at all the safety items, check all the fluids, the lights, the steering, suspension. Now, that doesn't include disassembling a bunch of stuff or diagnosing a bunch of stuff.
Right.
To give a vehicle a quick once over to keep the driver informed is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. What's important is finding our way to Lloyd's Automotive. How do we do that?
Yes, sir. So if you have a question, as always, don't hesitate to ask. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. And if you're in St. Paul, we're at 982 Grand Avenue on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth. If you need more information, check out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
Very good, Nick. Thank you so much. Have a good trip back. Happy Easter. And let's talk 1 week from today.
Sounds good. Happy Easter to you also, Danny. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. I hope we'll be back again next week.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.